Blog Talk Radio.
You may not be paid for the job.
And some of you will be
With your hosts, Tim Burton and Cal Fritzy. We trust that you're having a wonderful day. Canada, I hope you are enjoying your Victoria Day, long weekend, and that you are all behaving yourselves and you're getting home safe. But I would like to say hello to the co-host, and that is Tim. Hi, Tim. How are you?
Well, good evening, Kel. I'm very well, thank you. In fact, I'd like to say unbelievably well, just so I can throw it back to you, and you can tell me exactly how well you are as well.
As usual, I am infidelity fine.
You know, I'm sure our listeners never get tired of that. I'm absolutely positive about that. They're just sitting there slapping their thighs with laughter at the moment. But
I'm just waiting for the day when one of them come to the show and say, "You got me in trouble at work," and we'll say why. Because somebody asked how I was, and I said I was infidelity fine. They got sent to sensitive training courses.
Well, of course, that's bound to be the outcome in this politically correct environment. But I have, as an aside, I have a little bit of breaking news, which I've found in just the last 10 minutes. I'm not going to say a great deal about it, but I thought I would mention it just so that our listeners could say you heard it here first, and that is to do with Abu Hamza, our favourite hook-handed cleric, as the BBC loves to portray him. You may know, he's on trial in the United States on terrorism charges after having fought extradition for quite some time in the UK. He was eventually extradited and went on trial a few weeks ago. And he has just been found guilty. And it couldn't happen to a nicer guy, is all I can say about that. So what do you think about that? I don't have a great deal more news apart from the fact that he has been found guilty. That's from the BBC website, and that is literally within the last 10 minutes. So if I get any more news on that, I will tell you if I hear any more on the programme. But, yep, couldn't happen to a nicer guy. Kel, you there?
That is fantastic news. And I'm sorry, I muted myself and I was speaking. And really, he's been found guilty. Well, surprise, surprise, surprise.
Well, I mean, he had a very interesting defense. I think it was probably a very predictable defense, which basically consisted of, "I wasn't there and I didn't do it even if I was, Your Honor," or words to that effect. And he was, the terrorism charges include various activities around the world, in Yemen and in other places. So I don't know the specifics of what the verdict is, but I'm sure we'll be hearing about that in due course. But Abu Hamza, of course, is a household name over here. Old Hooky, some of the newspapers and magazines call him. Not within his hearing, of course, because that might offend him. And you know what it's like when you offend Muslims these days. They get all bitter and twisted about it. And I think we might have an example of a Muslim who's got all bitter and twisted about being offended on this program later, mightn't we, Kel?
Oh, yeah, because this is all they do. Fine. Now, when he was on trial in New York City, I understand that the security was heightened around that city, New York.
I imagine it would be, because it's a big deal, really, because he I actually wrote about his trial at various stages over the last few weeks. And one of the things that came up in the trial was all his terror contacts that he made during the time that he was in the UK. That was all brought up. And I'm sure there was a lot of things that came out during the trial that the Religion of Peace would rather hadn't come out. But one of the big things was the rekindling of the allegations about Londonistan, which is the name that was given to London back in the 1990s, because London seemed to be such a soft touch for Islamic terrorists to actually come and do pretty much whatever they wanted in terms of preaching and radicalization and dawah and so on, without anybody, almost as if they were completely untouchable. And of course, this was one of the things that infuriated many people over here, the fact that they could do this apparently with impunity, even though representatives of foreign European governments were actually looking for some of these people who were living, you know, quite openly in London and seemingly untouchable. So a lot of those allegations came up again. So there was a lot of old wounds being reopened. Abu Hamza was saying, well, yes, of course, you know, I'm not really a terrorist because I was being sponsored by MI5 and Special Branch. And he, all these kind of stories. Well, the thing about something like that is, you know, I mean, I don't know why I didn't use it in my defense, really, when I was on trial last month, because it's one of those things that nobody can really prove. If you say that something like that in court, it's very difficult to prove or disprove allegations like that, because obviously nobody from MI5 or Special Branch is likely to comment on whether it's true or false. But that was one of the things he brought up in his defense in New York. And so he wasn't only, I wasn't there, he was just saying, I wasn't there, Your Honour, and even if I was, I didn't do it. And anyway, MI5 and Special Branch said it was all right. So all these wonderful defences that he's put up while he's been in New York seems to have come to nothing. And like I say, it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. So I don't know what kind of sentencing...
Sorry, he was such a failure. He couldn't even be a successful terrorist. He ended up blowing off his own hands and blowing out one of his eyes.
Well, yeah.
Cooking in the kitchen.
It can't look good on your CV, can it, really? You know, I'm applying for a job as an explosives expert. Oh, that's nice, Mr. Hanser. What experience have you have? Oh, well, you know, I was assembling bombs all over the world the last few years. just ignore these hooks I have on the end of my arms. It's absolutely nothing to do with anything, really. Yes, I'm an explosives expert. So... yeah,
that's what I mean. He's such a dud. Hey, get it, Tim? Dud.
Well, yeah, quite. Yeah, but if he'd come up in front of me and said, "Yes, I've been spending the last 5 years of my life as an explosives expert," and he's got one eye and no hands to show for it, you know, I'd have to say, well, you know, when you went on your course to handle explosives, you know, was there a clause in your contract to say that you could get your money back? because it seems to me he's not. I almost feel sorry for him, almost but not quite. But
you're not serious.
No, I'm not serious. But we'll no doubt hear in the next day or two in more detail what's been happening with that. I should think, you know, he's. I don't suppose once he's been sentenced we'll ever hear from him again, because I think he's likely to do. I don't know what they called for with the prosecution, because I think the prosecution actually they have a say in what they think the sentence ought to be, I think, don't they, in the United States. I'm not quite sure how it works, but I think they were calling for some sentence which was, I don't know, 45 years or something like that. I'll have to go and look it up. And
in the United States, the prosecution has a sentencing recommendation that is ultimately left up to the discretion of the judge. The judge usually agrees with the prosecution's sentencing recommendations. It's the same as in Canada and the UK.
Oh, right, okay. Well, I suppose we best not second-guess what they're going to say, but hopefully they'll throw him in a cell and chuck away the key. And, the world will be better off. Not a lot better off, but a bit better off. And, you know, you have to welcome every little bit of good news as it arrives these days, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, that is good news that you brought to the listeners. I'm very pleased to see that. And I hope that they confiscate his hooks. And I know that in the... When he was incarcerated in Great Britain, they I don't know how to say this with a straight face, but there is some hapless poor little bailiff or whatever, prison guard rather, who was sentenced to cleaning his butt.
Well, you laugh, Kel, but apparently that used to be a real job in the Middle Ages, you know. I mean, the King of England, believe it or not, appointed somebody who actually, I don't know what the real title was, but it was something like the Royal Butt Cleaner. And that was a real job in the Middle Ages, and people used to, you know, they used to fight over being able to send their children to get jobs like that, because obviously it was a very prestigious, very prestigious position, you might say, back in the Middle Ages.
Well, honey, how was your day at work?
Yeah, honey, how was your day at work, honey? oh, you know, same shit, different day, and... But we don't really want to go down this route, do we, Kel? Oh, dear.
Can you imagine going into work in the morning and being told your work detail for the day? It's like, what?
Yes. Yeah, quite. I don't know if we really want to dwell on this. We do have other pressing details to discuss tonight, don't we, Kel? So maybe I ought to segue into that.
Well, I do. And ladies and gentlemen, we're doing that right now because we only have 2 hours on this show, and we have so many things that we have to get through. But one thing that I am bringing up, and I know that Tim is probably sick and tired and of discussing this fell off, but I am not in particular because he is taking another run at Mr. Tim Burton, and that is our own Fayez Nagel. Now, he has a website, and I put the link right in the show notes, and I put it in the chat room as well. I want people to go to this site and take a look at what this guy is saying, because he's just barking mad crazy. There we go. Now, everybody knows who Fayez Nagel is, and he was awarded the Order of the British Empire. Okay, that's one that I want to ask Tim about. And he is on the Queen's Honor List as of June of 2009. But this guy just won't shut the fuck up. He keeps taking runs at Tim Burton, and I'm getting fed up with it. We have been... commenting to him very politely, and he will not publish our comments. No comments, yeah. Mm-hmm, figures eight him. But this guy just won't shut the hell up.
Well, no. One of the just to briefly remind people, the whole point that of Fayez Nagel at this point is no, that's not the phrase I'm looking for. The whole reason he came to my attention back in June of last year was because of an article that was published in the Daily Telegraph by a very good investigative reporter called Andrew Gilligan, and he uncovered the fact that Fiyaz Magal had been running this organization, Tell Mama, which was supposedly dedicated to unearthing online hate crime, particularly anti-Muslim hate crime, and he'd been getting large sums of money in the form of public grants. But the trouble was there wasn't enough hate crime to go round, so he'd resorted to massaging the figures to paint a picture which was really quite different from the truth of the matter. And Andrew Gilligan uncovered this, published it in the Daily Telegraph, and he subsequently had his funding withdrawn. And it, you know, he brought it on himself, basically. And I saw this, and I was outraged by the fact that somebody at the head of a public organisation should, in my view, should not be in the position of manipulating figures in order to extract money fraudulently from the public purse, because that was what was happening. And I sent a few tweets from my Twitter account. I was quite rude. I don't mind openly saying that. I was actually quite rude. I called him a lying Muslim scumbag. And I also called him the famous phrase which has gone around the world, which is mendacious grievance-mongering taqiyya artist. And a phrase which I'm very pleased to say has resulted in quite a cottage industry with coffee mugs bearing that phrase and Fiyaz Magal's features actually being given away on this very show. Isn't that right, Kel? It was it's really quite something that the phrase did go around the world in the way it did. So anyway, he took exception to what I said. He complained to his local police force. They decided that they would arrest me, and the Crown Prosecution Service decided they would charge me with racially aggravated harassment. And I was taken to court, and I won the case. I won't go into details in great detail right now, but I'll publish the link to the trial in the chat room now. So if anybody just wants to take a look through that and just refresh their memories on that, then they can. And it was the judge was quite clear. He said that there was certainly enough in my tweets to make Mr. Magal feel upset. And but that wasn't the test. The test was it fair political comment under the circumstances? And he decided that it was. And more than that, he actually listened to the testimony of Professor Hans Jansen, who's an Islamic studies, he's an expert from the University of Leiden in the Netherlands, and he agreed that because of the nature of taqiyya, it was not a racial slur to put the words mendacious and lying and Muslim into the same sentence, because of the Islamic doctrine of taqiyya, which allows Muslims to lie to non-Muslims if it promotes Islam or prevents its denigration. That was quite an acceptable doctrine to base my comments on. And all right, he said Mr. Burton might want to moderate his language in the future, he said, but nevertheless, the boundaries of free speech were not transgressed to the point where it became racially aggravated harassment, and so I was acquitted. But Fiyaz Magal, of course, he just can't let it go. You would have thought that it would have been time for a little quiet reflection by somebody who had lost not only that court case, but another subsequent court case for libel against the Daily Telegraph a few weeks later. He lost that one as well. And you would have thought it would have been time for a little quiet reflection and say, well, maybe there is something about this ideology which isn't, you know, really cutting the mustard. Maybe that Tim Burton character's got a point. But no, he's blaming everybody and everything. So not only is he having another go at me for virtually the same things that I was acquitted for only a few weeks previously. He's also having a go at a lot of people in the counter-jihad environment, such as Robert Spencer and Pamela Geller, and our very own Mike Holt. fact, he had quite a few things to say about Mike Holt, which I suppose it's nice to be mentioned in dispatches, but I have to say I do share your disappointment, Kel, the fact that he didn't mention the little red fox.
Nobody ever does. I'm used to it.
Well, I think that's terrible, really. I thought, well, should I write to him and say, well, you know, if you're going to have a go at all these people, you know, please include Kel Fritzy, because she works really hard on everybody's behalf, you know, letting people know just exactly what she thinks of the Islamic ideology. And, you know, in fact, in many ways, she works harder than all the rest of us put together. And
I'm the hardest worker out of the whole lot of you, and you all get written up, and I get nothing. What's wrong?
Yeah, it seems
this
it
is
seems
unfair.
I'm stamping
my tiny little feet now.
It seemed most unfair. That's exactly what I thought.
Damn!
Yeah. But he wrote on his blog at length. I mean, you know, not just one or two paragraphs. He must have spent about a day and a half writing that blog.
Oh,
and putting
1,500 words long.
Yeah, easy.
Like,
you know, I mean,
it's huge.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, that's a day and a half, couple of days' work. So he's obviously still really, really upset about it, which, you know, it says more about him than it does about myself or Mike Holt or Robert Spencer or Pamela Geller. The fact that he just cannot see beyond his own twisted view of things, and he feels that everything that goes wrong is somebody else's fault and nothing to do with him at all. And I actually wrote a response, which I don't suppose is going to get published on his blog, to say that if it had not been for the expose by Andrew Gilligan in the Telegraph newspaper, he would likely never have heard of me at all. But the fact that he was reported to have done these things, and it wasn't just Andrew Gilligan that thought this. The Association of Chief Police Officers called him out on his figures. The Department of Communities and Local Government, who supplied the grant, they called him out, and they took his money away. And so it wasn't just the perverse ramblings of a demented reporter at the Telegraph, as he seems to imply. The fact was that he had done these things, and there were a lot of people out there who felt that he shouldn't have done those things, and they took some action. The action I would have liked them to take would have been to prosecute him for fraud, but apparently he's still got friends in high places because he hasn't been prosecuted for fraud. And the other thing he hasn't been prosecuted for is actually lying on his police statement, because a couple of months after I was charged, my solicitor forwarded the police statement to me. I mean, this is quite a usual thing. You know, you get charged and you don't necessarily see everything that's written about you by the complaining party, the plaintiff, as we call it over here. And he'd written a police statement which extended to four pages, alleging this, that and the other about me. And the police officer said, did you send these tweets that Mr. Mughal alleges? And I said, yes, I did. But also on that police statement was a statement from Mr. Mughal saying that he had actually asked me to stop sending the tweets, and that formed part of the harassment, because part of the concept of harassment is that ask to stop and you don't, that aggravates the harassment charge. And so he lied on his police statement because he never asked me to stop. He lied in a way that directly and materially affected the severity of the charges that were brought against me. And I mentioned this to my solicitor, and he said, well, if we can get the proof from Twitter support in terms of what tweets were sent and what weren't from Fiaz Mughal's account, he says, we might be able to build a case. But let's see what happens with your case first of all, because we can worry about that at a later stage. And that was one of the things that I was I was absolutely fuming about when I read on the police statement the fact that he'd said that he'd asked me to stop sending those tweets, because I'd sent several tweets to him, and he said I'd asked that he had asked me to stop, and he didn't. He actually lied on his police statement, and I felt that he ought to be prosecuted for perverting the course of justice. And my solicitor said, well, let's deal with one thing at a time, and we took the case. The case was taken to court on April the 8th, and I won. And I thought, well, I can be magnanimous in victory here. And I actually wrote to him and said, it's not gone unnoticed. And I don't suppose he's going to publish this comment either on his blog. But I wrote to him and said, it's not gone unnoticed that you lied on your police statement in a way that directly and materially affected the severity of the charge that was subsequently laid against me. And I said, however, I'm prepared to be magnanimous in victory, and you should count yourself lucky that you are not facing a charge of perverting the course of justice. And I fired that off to him. I don't suppose he'll publish it, but nevertheless, you know, the case is that he did lie on his police statement, and if I had wanted to resurrect it and go after him, I could have done so. But to be quite honest, I can't be asked. I really can't be asked. And I'd rather just let it be known that I know that's what he did, and I want him to understand that I know that that's what he did, and that's good enough for me. So there you go. But for him to spend what must have been at least a day and a half compiling that that blog entry just shows how upset he was. And, well, he can be as upset as he likes, as far as I'm concerned. What he ought to have done was to indulge in a little self-criticism, a little self-reflection, and said to himself, well, maybe there is something about the Islamic doctrine of taqiyya says, because the judge said that, you know, he didn't get it right. He was asked in court about the concept of taqiyya, and he gave an explanation which was inaccurate. And that's why I was so pleased about having Professor Hans Jansen in court, because he could refute what Fiaz Magal said, because if it had just been down to me, the prosecution could have said, you don't know anything about taqiyya, how could you? You're not even a Muslim. But they could hardly refute Professor Hans Jansen. And so when Professor Hans Jansen was asked, he said, well, what do you think about Fiaz Magal's explanation of taqiyya? And Professor Hans Jansen just smiled, and he said, well, no doubt Mr. Magal is well-meaning, he says, but he doesn't understand the Sharia, and he doesn't understand the concept of taqiyya. And he says, the imams, the scholars, the clerics, he says, they understand very well what it means, and Mr. Magal's interpretation is inaccurate. And I thought, yes, that's just what we want. And, you know, the judge was very impressed by Professor Jansen's evidence, I could tell. And
just so damn proud of yourself, aren't you?
Well, it's not that I'm proud of myself. I'm pleased that we got the verdict that we did. I'm pleased that we got the judge that we did, who was able to see through Fiaz Magal's taqiyya about taqiyya, to be quite honest, because Fiaz Magal was saying, no, taqiyya doesn't mean that at all. He says it's purely a concept that's used by far-right organizations in order to defame Islam, and that's just completely untrue. But if it hadn't been for Professor Jansen explaining in detail that Fiaz Magal was wrong, then, you know, things might have taken another turn. So I'm pleased about the way things went, and I don't want to take all the credit myself. I credit where it's due. And also, we're on the subject, I'd like to say a big thank you to everybody who supported me on the run-up to the trial, including yourself, Kel, obviously, and everybody else who's listening in the studio. And I'd also like to say a big thank you to everybody who turned up on the day and sat in the public gallery and supported me on the day. That's really tremendous, and that I'm really pleased about.
Sally Fields, we love you.
Sally Fields.
When she won the Academy Award, she went up to the podium to collect her statue, and she said to the crowd, "You love me, you really love me."
Well, I hope I never get like that, but it was a huge relief, obviously, when I was acquitted, because, you know, it could have been.
But why won't this guy shut the hell up? Why is he going on and on and on and on and on about it? He's got a whole bloody dossier on you here. Like, geez, he's even subtitled the articles, like the tweets. When you go, the arrest of Timothy Martin Burton. Oh, and you keep going down, and Australian pals, the verdict. Shut up already, okay?
He lost, and that's what I mean, is that he is completely unable to reflect, and that's what I mean when I say it says more about him than it does about me, because if I had been in that position and I had lost a case, well, two cases in very quick order, and I'd be thinking, well, you know, maybe there is something about what I'm doing that I could learn from. But he's
Agador right here, and I think he has something on his mind he'd like to share. Hi, Agador. How are you today?
Well, I'm absolutely fine. Hello, Kel, and hello, Tim. Yeah, now Tim. One thing, you know, I know that you know, in some ways this you know, this trial outcome is elating to you, but you know, you should always be cautious and you have to be very careful. Furniture selection is extremely important. Okay, you want to be sure that it's all stylish and functional, because as this all shows, you are now living completely rent free inside Mr. McGall's head.
Very good, Agador. I like it.
Beautiful.
Yeah, very, very true. I mean, there's a whole lot of things about what he wrote that would keep a psychologist occupied for months. And I think, you know, if we go through a little bit of what he said on his blog and pulled it apart, we could, you know, have quite an interesting time, which is what I think we're going to do this evening. But yeah, you're quite right, Agador. I hadn't thought of it like that, and it is like living inside Mr. McGall's head. Oh, what a horrible thought. You know, you're standing there going, "Is anybody there?" The echoes are bouncing off the walls, you know.
Plenty of bug spray, yeah.
The acoustics are great.
Yeah, I imagine the acoustics will be very good, because there's obviously, you know, not a lot of grey matter in there to worry about. But all sorts of little interesting things crop up. You know, I do wonder whatever possessed Her Majesty to pin a medal on his chest back in 2009.
Oh, you know. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Can that sort of thing be revoked, the Order of the British Empire being granted?
That's exactly right, and it's normally only given to people who've done exceptional things in service of the community. Now, my private theory is that she actually mistook Fiaz McGall character for one of her more obese corgis and accidentally pinned the medal on him, you know, thinking that she was about to put the lead round the neck of one of her corgis and just got it wrong. You know, it's stranger things have happened, because apparently he was supposed to have done all sorts of wonderful things in the service of the community. But you have to look at it in the light of what it is that he's written on his blog. And he's saying that wouldn't it be nice if we could all get on together, if everybody could live together. He actually puts this on his blog: if everybody could live together free from fear and violence and intimidation and bigotry. And again, I wrote to him and said, well, nobody wishes that more than we do, Fiaz, but Islam will simply not allow it. And that's the thing that he misses completely. He thinks that all this hatred and bigotry is coming from what he calls far-right organizations, such as EDL and Liberty GB and so on. I mean, quite apart from the fact that the far-right epithet is really worn out these days, we're conservative patriots. Agador says we're civil rights oriented organizations, and we are not far right in by any stretch of the imagination, except in the minds of people on the left of the political spectrum, because it suits their purpose to demonize us and call us far right. But we're not. We're conservative patriots who are concerned about the direction our countries are going in the West and want to be able to say something about it without being called out as racist, bigoted Islamophobes. And he cannot let go of that. He's like a stuck record with him. He thinks we're all far right, we're all bigoted, we're all racist, we're all Islamophobic. There's nothing wrong with Islam in his eyes. And anybody who calls out Islam or is critical of Islam or the Quran or the Islamic prophet Muhammad or anything that his prophet might have said or done or not done or didn't say, you can't criticize that. And if you do, there you go, you're being racist, bigoted, and Islamophobic again.
Absolutely. And I'm just interjecting because, first of all, you need to come up for air. And second of all, we haven't even gotten into the meat and potatoes of the article. But one thing that really bothers me is that he was granted the Order of the British Empire, and he was found to be fraudulent, and that Order of the British Empire was never revoked. Why is that? I don't understand how this person can get away with what he did and still have that honorific.
The thing is, it's obvious to everybody that what he did was fraudulent, okay? But that is not the same thing as being found fraudulent in a court of law. And nobody has taken the steps to prosecute him for what he did in a court of law, because he should be prosecuted. He fraudulently manipulated the figures, and there's money on the end of this, a lot of money. And there are people who go to prison and they spend years in prison for stealing or for fraudulently acquiring a lot less money than we're talking about here. We're talking over the last financial year for which we have figures, £214,000, and in the years before that, there were similar amounts of money, and it all adds up to the thick end of £1 million, you know, and people go to prison for many, many years for taking that sort of money under false pretenses from the taxpayer. You take, for example, we have TV programs over here that highlight welfare fraud, for example, in order to discourage people from doing it, which, you know, that's fair enough. That's a fair objective. And these programs show these various welfare benefit cheats, and they get caught out in the end. And they might have embezzled, oh, I don't know, £10,000, £12,000, £15,000, something like that. You know, still a fair amount of money. And they get caught and they get sent to prison for typically 2, 3, 4 years, something like that. Now, why should somebody like Fayez Magal, just because he's got an OBE, be exempt from the same sort of scrutiny? I think he should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law, and he should certainly be stripped of his ability to run a public company that gets taxpayers' money. He should certainly, in my view, on conviction, be stripped of his OBE, without a doubt. I mean, that is a usual thing. If somebody is convicted of a serious crime after they have been awarded an honour by the Queen, it's not unusual for that honour to be rescinded. And in my view, that is certainly what should happen. But I think he's got a lot of friends in high places, and he's managed to escape the consequences of his actions so far. I personally would very much like to see him prosecuted, but, you know, the decision is not mine to take. So I content myself by annoying him immensely, like a little mosquito buzzing around his ear, sending him a few tweets every now and then and a few replies to his blog. But I mean, that seems to, it's a very rewarding activity, because that seems to upset him immensely, and there's there's a lot of enjoyment to be gained out of that. So even if he doesn't get prosecuted by the Crown Prosecution Service for what he did, you know, we can still have a lot of fun with him, and I think we should.
And well, you should. That is something I enjoy doing, and I know it's a little juvenile on my end, but it does make me feel better, because this guy will not give up, and he's taking a run at my colleague again, and the red fox is turning into the mad fox over this, because I get very, very vexed when people go near my people, and the claws come out, and the teeth are bared, and this guy just won't shut the hell up. He won't let it go, and I'm sick and tired of turning around every single day and seeing something from this guy being espoused, and especially when he espouses about Tim Burton. I've had it, Tim. Like, this guy, this article is total insanity, a common sense approach to communities. That's the name of his blog. But the title of this particular article, Timothy Martin Burton, a.k.a. MCAT, at Cat Strangler 101, and the targeted campaign. Oh, my God. And what he writes, like, he's got little subtitles for this article, the tweets. Over the last 10 months, I have been subjected to a hate campaign that involved West Midlands-based Tim Burton, who, through a variety of accounts, targeted me because of my faith, and on the back of a series of articles highlighting the Tau Mama Islamophobic Monitoring Project. What? Oh, God. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many inaccuracies in there. I mean, he says he keeps referring to his faith, and this is nothing to do with faith at all. And this is actually something
he was getting money. He was getting money. Hey, give me the money. Show me the money. That's what he was doing. It had nothing to do with his faith. And he, I mean, it's not even a faith.
Well, this was one of the points I brought up at the trial, because the prosecution alleged that I was targeting him because of his faith, and I said that wasn't actually the case. I had done what I did because of what was reported in the Telegraph, and in any case, I don't have a problem with faith, and I was at great pains to explain that faith, if it's something that is common to pretty much every human community since the beginning of time, and if it's something that gives you a source of comfort and strength, if it's something that helps you through the trials and tribulations of life, if it's something that helps you towards a path of spiritual growth, spiritual enlightenment, a search for goodness, beauty and truth, then it's to be applauded. What I have a problem with is politics masquerading as faith, and there is a big, big difference, and that's what I brought out in the course of the trial. It's nothing to do with targeting his faith at all. But yes, of course, he glosses over the fact that he was actually responsible for manipulating the figures of his organization in order to get money. That was the point. He was indulging in fraudulent activity, and he got caught out, but he glosses over that and never mentions it.
We still have Agador with us, and Agador, if, for example, in the United States where you are, if you were awarded the Purple Heart, but it was found out that you actually shot yourself in the foot on purpose, could that be revoked?
Oh, absolutely, that could be revoked. Not only could that be revoked, but if it was found that I shot myself in the foot, that, you know, I could actually be convicted for that. If I was still serving, now, if someone correct me if I'm wrong, but if I was still serving in the U.S. military at the time, I would be put before a military tribunal and charged in that case. And yes, I could be charged under American criminal law if I was no longer serving. Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah,
that could
be
removed
be a
quickly.
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
and
absolutely,
see,
it would be.
this is why I wanted to bring up parallel analogies, because this guy was found out and out lying. He lied, and he still enjoys the Order of the British Empire, whereas that soldier that shot himself, I don't know, like I say, in the foot, and that because maybe he wanted to come home a little earlier, but he was granted a Purple Heart, and then it was discovered that it was a self-inflicted wound. This Fayez Magal, he engaged in the self-inflicted wound. He lied. He lied to the public. He lied to the taxpayer. He lied to people like Tim. And Tim called him out on it. And this guy just won't shut up, Agador.
Well, I actually have a question for Tim. You know, this interests me. All right, now, Tim, you say that honors can be revoked. Can you give us a very broad sketch of how that would be done?
Well, let me think. As I understand it, the Queen has advisers who come to her and say, well, in this year's honours list, Your Majesty, we've drawn up a list of people who we think have been exceptional in one form or another. And she looks down it, and as long as she doesn't see any names that are obviously unsuitable, she'll say, yep, go ahead and set it all up. You know, you can imagine her saying, well, who is this Fayez Magal chappy? And somebody will say, well, Your Majesty, the rumour has it that he's done very good works in, you know, things like interfaith outreach and community cohesion, and they're the buzzwords of the day, and we think he ought to have some sort of recognition for it. Oh, very well, bring him in. And, you know, he's brought in, and she slaps the medal on his chest, and there you go, now run along, because I'm late for my... And off he trots. But the thing, it can work the other way. And if somebody is convicted, you know, somebody in the palace who advises the Queen will be paying attention to what's going on. And if it's a serious crime, the advisor will make the appropriate recommendation for the honour to be stripped. And I imagine... I haven't gone through the exact process, but I should think it will require a signature from the Queen, but she will be led by her advisers as to what is what is suitable for revocation. I mean, you know, she won't call him in and rip the medal off his chest and say, there you go, it's going straight in the waste paper bin, run away, you boy.
That's really too bad, Tim, because she could do that, and she could go off with his head.
Yeah.
You know, and then a knight with a broadsword, you know, a real one would come and go, whack.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the you know, like a court martial where you have all your buttons stripped off and your lapels ripped off you and your sword broken over your knee. I mean, I think it would be great if they actually did things like that these days. But no, it's probably just a signature on a bit of paper, and then he gets his medal revoked, and that's it. He's then no longer allowed to call himself an OBE, and I think that would be very fitting under the circumstances if that were to happen. But for that to happen, there would have to be a conviction, and for there to be a conviction, there would have to be a charge, and it doesn't look as though his friends in the Crown Prosecution Service are minded to charge him over this. Now, he said towards the end of the article on his blog that despite these setbacks that he's had, and despite the fact that he doesn't feel justice has been done, poor little lad, he's still going to work with the Crown Prosecution Service in order to get justice for Muslims. Well, yeah, of course he will, because the Crown Prosecution Service is stuffed to the gills with these weaselly Muslims that will prosecute with a bias towards non-Muslims. Like myself, they had absolutely no problem bringing the racially aggravated harassment charge. Like Paul Weston, they had no problem bringing the racially aggravated harassment charge. And let's not forget, it's not the police that do this, it's the Crown Prosecution Service themselves. And so the police might make the arrest, okay, because in in the case of Paul Weston, for example, they'd arrested him under what they called, I think, a Section 27 dispersal notice. And when he was taken to the station, the details were submitted to the Crown Prosecution Service, and the decision came back that they were not going to charge him under Section 27. They were going to de-arrest him for that, but then re-arrest him straight away on a much more serious charge of racially aggravated harassment. So the Crown Prosecution Service have actually looked at it and said, yeah, we obviously want to discourage people like Paul Weston and like Tim Burton, irrespective of whether the charge has a good chance of success, because they're not supposed to bring charges unless they have got a really good chance of success. Now, all right, in my case, it perhaps wasn't so cut and dried, but I think anybody with an ounce of common sense would look at the case of Paul Weston and say, well, hang on a minute, what was he doing? He was quoting one of our ex-prime ministers, probably the most famous statesman in the UK of the 20th century, and he was quoting from what he said in a book that he wrote 100 years ago, and he was doing it because he felt it was relevant to today. And I think it falls under the grounds of fair political comment. And for him to be charged with racially aggravated harassment, I don't think that charge has got a hope in hell of succeeding. And I think it will get thrown out by any competent judge when it comes to court. But my view is that the Crown Prosecution Service ought not to have even considered bringing that charge under the circumstances, and the fact that they did bring the charge says to me that the Crown Prosecution Service have got a bias against conservative patriots like Paul Weston and myself, and are bringing these charges in order to chill free speech and to prevent people who want to speak out against the Islamization of our country from having a fair say in the run-up to a very important set of elections.
Okay.
Sorry, have I sort of brought in too many points all at once on that? I mean, I
don't know which one to dissect.
Coming up.
Ecuador,
that's my short answer for you. The long answer will come along after the break, but I'll throw it over to Ecuador because I think he's got a question he wants to throw at me.
That was a very good explanation, and I'll come back to make an observation. What Fayaz Magal is doing with this article of his is what a broadcaster over here named Tammy Bruce once called redirection. This is something that the people on the left end of the political spectrum do. They act one way, and then they accuse everyone else of acting that way. For instance, you know, they call people who are not themselves totalitarians, and then act like totalitarians themselves. The American IRS scandal, the IRS targeting Tea Party groups. It's right out of a book written here in the United States called Rules for Radicals. And it works. Sadly, it's very effective, because if you have enough people who agree with Fizzy Bollocks and say that he's the victim, and that his ideology is not the one doing the victimizing, then he wins. But we have to recognize this for what it is and point it out. That's my observation.
Yeah. I think part of the problem is that so many people have lost the ability to think critically over the last 30 or 40 years. People of a certain age, I'm including myself in that, who had the good fortune to go through the educational system at a time where political correctness had not got the grip that it currently has, we're encouraged to think critically about anything really. You could take any topic and you would be encouraged to think about it from all sorts of angles, and that way your critical faculties were developed. But that is not a skill that is encouraged now, and so a lot of people... Ooh. Sorry, go on.
No, I was agreeing. Please go on.
Oh, okay. A lot of people now, when they're presented with statements like that, which are basically bald-faced lies coming from the left of the political spectrum, they, because they don't have the critical faculties developed as they might have done if they'd been through the educational system, say, 40 or 50 years ago, the tendency is to accept those statements at face value and go, oh, okay then. And then if those statements are repeated often enough by people on the political left, it then becomes accepted as a truth without any further further thought by anybody. I mean, people like us say, hold on a minute, let's just think about it. But we're in the minority at the moment anyway. And a lot of people who are out there say, well, it must be right because we hear it so many times, it must be right, it must be right. And we're constantly having to stand up and say, yeah, but hang on, the emperor's got no clothes here, and you can't see it. And when enough people, when we convince enough people that that is the case, then things will start to change. But what we're up against is 30, 40 years of an educational system that has taught people not to think critically about these things. And so, as you say, when the people on the left say that white is black or black is white and repeat it often enough, that's what we end up with. We end up with a situation where they are propagating obvious falsehoods, but not enough people can see those falsehoods because of the way they're presented and the inability to critically analyze them and call them out for what they are. I mean, I think this is what we do on these shows, on Red Fox Radio, on Freedom Loving Infidels, on EDL and so on. This is it's so important because we have to make people stop and think about what it is that we are constantly being told, and we have to take our time and patiently explain why what we are being told is wrong. And initially, people will say, "Oh, you're racist, you're bigoted, and you're Islamophobic for even questioning what the people on the left of the political spectrum say." But after a while, if they give you a little bit of time to elaborate, they'll see where the truth really lies, and the truth is in what we're saying. And we need to bring that truth out so that it's as plain as day for everybody, because that's the truth is on our side. And it's not always the easiest thing to explain, and sometimes you have to repeat yourself two or three times before people start to understand some of the concepts, which is something I worry about a lot, because I do find myself repeating myself, and I do think, I wonder if I've said that once too many times. But I think when it comes to telling the truth, you can never say it too many times. You've got to keep at it and get the truth out there.
And on that note, I think what we're going to do is that we are beyond the top of the hour, and that's our break time, because everybody needs to drink their coffees and their teas and collect their thoughts, as it were. I want to talk about something a little on the personal side, though, and that is that we have had a very, very, very tough go so far this year with our friends, our Blog Talk Radio family in particular, and that we have Katie, and we know her as she is, what can I say? I can't say enough about Katie. She is a wonderful lady, and that she is humorous. She is engaging. She's smart. And we know her as Vindalis. She's not been well lately. We also know Mary, who is always at the shows. Both these ladies are undergoing a treatment for cancer. And I talked with Katie the other day, and she's miserable, as she should be. Dana is not doing well. G-Ski is not doing well. All these people that mean so much to us, all these wonderful people. It's really, really hard on all of us, but you know what? These are the members of our family, our BTR family. So I'm going to play this song for all of them right now. And this also goes out to Jeff. Welcome back. You're listening to the Red Fox Blogger with your host, Tim Burton and Kelios. We have Agador joining us on the line as well in the studio. And we have people in the chat room that are gracing it. And Tim and myself, we so much appreciate you're taking time out of your otherwise busy day to spend with ours, and that includes, of course, Agador, Bigfoot. And by the way, go to Bigfoot's place. Bigfoot, please, put your link in the chat room so people can click on it and take a look at all the photos that you and Moving took there at Operation American Spring over the weekend. We have Dodgy Dave. We have Eric Kyle. We have numerous guests in the chat room. If one of you is Terry, I'd love from Canada. We have Luchadora. We have Noe 90. T.P. Nani and Vito Esposito. And believe me, these are fine folks. A lot of them have their own radio programs right here on Blog Talk Radio. That includes Luchadora. She is part of the Radio Jihad Network, and the proprietor of the Radio Jihad Network is Vito Esposito, who has a show tonight, by the way, 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. So Noe 90, he belongs to the Reactionary Speaks Network, and you can hear him 7 p.m. Saturday evenings. And please, if you have a show and you have a blog, please share it in the chat room. Now, what we're going to do, and I'm actually glad that Agador called in, because when people call in, I have a tendency not to want to let them go because I am always finding something that is worthy of discussion. I think Agador would have a lot to say about this, Tim. And hang on, where is he? He's muted. Tim?
What? I'm here. I thought you'd done it on purpose, Jill.
You know that you I only mute everybody when we play the songs.
Oh, okay. I thought perhaps you'd put me on the naughty step, you know. It happens from time to time, ladies and gentlemen. Kel puts me on the naughty step, and I'm talking away, and nobody can hear me. So it's lovely to be back. Thank you for bringing me back in, Kel. It's really nice.
Actually, you know what? You have more power than me, buddy. You could end the show. You have control over that big red button.
Oh, yeah, the big red button. Yeah, that's true. I'm so glad you reminded me. Yes, well, okay. No, I thought I would just leave it until you'd finished talking about everybody in the chat room and the people who'd phoned in tonight. Did you want to see if you could bring Sue from New Mexico back on, or did you want to carry on?
Let's see if we got Sue back. Let's see. I would love to speak with her. Let's see. Hi, Sue.
Hi, Gal.
How you doing, girl?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. Kind of losing my voice right now.
Oh, you and me both.
Yeah. And hi, Tim.
Yeah, hi, Sue. Hi, Sue.
It's a great show.
Yeah, glad you're enjoying it. Good of you to come and come on the show and talk to us. How are you now? Because I understand you've not been feeling too well recently.
Well, I'm doing pretty good. It's just hard to talk right now. But anyway, I love your show, and I love what all of you are doing, and I just want to say God bless.
Oh, thank you, Sue.
Thank you so very much. And ladies and gentlemen, Sue is recovering from illness, but she's on the road to recovery. We have people less fortunate at this point, and we want to remember them. We want to think of Mary and in Dallas. We want to think about our ladies. We want to think about our gentlemen. That includes Jeff Mitchell of the East Anglia. Tim, he's going to fire me. EDO Radio.
Yes.
And he is not doing too well these days. And so, you know, our BTR, our little BTR family, hold us all, hold us all close, hold us all tight. But we are moving into a different topic. And Sue, I'm just going to put you on mute because I'm getting a little feedback from you. But I am glad that Agador is still with us because there is a really weird story out of the United States. And this is Scalia law. It's a lot like Sharia law, Tim. It points out John Fugelsang following Supreme Court prayer ruling. Now, apparently, political commentator and comedian John Fugelsang pointed out a logical consequence of the Supreme Court's decision to uphold sectarian prayers in Greece versus Galloway on MSNBC's The Ed Show. He suggested that the ruling was making Justice Antonia Scalia's version of U.S. law look a lot like Sharia law by allowing one religion to dominate, according to Ross Story. Jesus says, you take care of the poor, you take care of the less fortunate. Fugelsang said, this is about a whole different thing, establishing Christianity as a dormant and a dominant religion, rather. If Jesus came back, he wouldn't sue to make his name be said in Caesar's house because Jesus wasn't about asserting personal power. And the irony is there are the guys that are praying for a separation of mosque and state over there, erasing the wall of church and state over here. He continues to say, and it's interesting, with the government and religion, Scalia law is a lot like Sharia law. And so what we're going to do is I've got a clip here, and I'm going to load it and see what happens. Well, with my luck, Tim, I'll get a pop-up.
I think I can comment without this. All right. It's a very interesting dichotomy we have going on here in this country regarding all of this. There are many of my friends, my religious friends on the right, who are saying, and with some justification, that Christianity is under attack here in the United States. If one espouses Christian beliefs publicly, they can be fired, they can be ostracized from certain segments of our society. I think No Way 90 would agree with me on this. It is a almost cultural jihad against Christianity and those who openly espouse their faith. Not trying to shove it down other people's throat, just saying, for instance, that they may not believe in that gay marriage is a good thing, and they are instantly taken out for that. Now, the other side of that is that the people who want there to not be a separation between mosque and state are doing exactly what Tim is talking about. They're saying, well, that's all fine for Christians, Jews, Buddhists, Hindus, and everyone else, but that's not the way things are in Islam. Now, this is where we in the United States have to be very careful. We have to begin to say, no, this is the United States of America. We cannot favor one religion. If it is a separation of church and state, it must be that for everyone. So we have to make, when we begin to say, well, if someone doesn't want to admit someone because they are of a certain religion or serve them because they are of a certain religion, we should allow that for religious freedom. We also have to understand that such can be used by Islamists to assert their version of Sharia on the public. This goes to speech. This goes to service to others in commerce. This is a very important issue that a lot of the people in the United States are going to have to deal with. And in the end, I see it. I see only one thing to hold up, having been. Inculcated into the depredations of Islam by good people such as yourself, Kel, and you, Tim, and that is that we cannot allow Islam to have power. Everywhere they gain power and everywhere they gain influence to a certain degree, everyone else suffers. Everything else suffers. Freedom suffers. Civilization suffers. and we have to keep focused on that. And now I'm going to pant for a little bit and turn it back to you guys.
And I do have it buffered up, and I'm going to play. It's an 8-minute long clip. I'm not going to play the entire thing, but I do want to play 3 minutes of it. And this is Jonna Fuglsang. Ladies and gentlemen, you better work for me, you bad boy.
That even after yesterday's bad ruling, we still think they're doing something wrong. They're going counter to the very nature and flow of the country, where we try to be more sensitive to people of different belief systems or people who don't have any religious background. But five members of the court yesterday seemed to be moving in the opposite direction, trying to prove that because we had a certain kind of prayer 200 years ago, obviously nothing has changed and we don't have to be more open now. That's a silly, a preposterous theory of governance.
John Fuglsang, Moore tried to walk back his statement on Monday, telling a local newspaper, the Montgomery Advertiser, that the First Amendment, quote, applies to the rights God gave us to be free in our modes of thinking and as far as religious liberty to all people, regardless of what they believe. I'm not quite sure how this explanation changes anything. Your response to that?
Well, Ed, this is why modern right-wing Christianity has become the leading cause of atheism in our society, and it proves that right-wing Christians like Judge Moore are dumber than a box of myrrh. I'm not going to be as polite as Reverend Barry was on this matter. It is worth pointing out that 8 of the 10 commandments are completely legal in this country, and in fact, coveting our neighbor's goods is what our entire economic system is based on. But this is all about the fact that sheep need to be fleeced. So Roy Moore says this, says exactly what they want to hear, this tidal wave of ignorance that this speech that he gave, where he talked about how we have to only honor the God of Holy Scripture, not realizing that Muslims worship the exact same God of Holy Scripture, and no one ever said that Buddha created the world, and no one ever said Muhammad did either. That's Allah. So he's dumb as a box of myrrh. We know that. The real thing is we've allowed Congress to worship the golden calf openly for a long time. And the irony of this is that it's the liberals who are the real conservatives on this issue, because separation of church and state is the conservative point of view.
You know,
Go ahead, Reverend.
Yeah, I mean, I was really disheartened that the Obama administration came in on the side of having these prayers in Greece, New York, the decision yesterday, because they said, we're worried that if they couldn't pray, maybe the Congress couldn't pray. Really, truly, Ed, do you think President Obama thinks that the fact that John Boehner has a prayer before the House of Representatives every morning has led to good, positive legislation? I mean, that's absolutely silly.
And it's unbiblical.
And that explanation from Judge Moore, I mean, you could put monkeys into a room with a couple of typewriters, and they could have come up with a more sensible, a comprehensible statement than what Judge Moore did to kind of backpedal his way out of that outrageous statement from last week.
But Reverend, that's not really the thing I get with it. Is it's not really about Christianity. It's about Christian supremacy. Jesus says you take care of the poor, you take care of the less fortunate. This is about a whole different thing, establishing Christianity as the dominant religion. If Jesus came back, he wouldn't sue to make his name be said in Caesar's house, because Jesus wasn't about asserting personal power. And the irony is, these are the guys who are praying for a separation of mosque and state over there, erasing the wall of church and state over here. And it's interesting, with government and religion, Scalia law is a lot like Sharia law.
All right,
good
gentlemen,
point.
We'll leave it there. John Fuglsang and Reverend Barry Lynn, good to have you on the Ed Show on this subject tonight. Thanks so much. Coming up.
Well, Agador, what do you think about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is the left tap dancing around the issues and things. Of course, the left doesn't, in our country anyway, does not want the church involved in the state at all. In other words, the left would enjoy it very much. You know, were truth be told, for the church to simply disappear and so they could take over and you know, all religion would just be gone. They know that can't happen, but they're going to try for it just the same. I go to my original statement on this, though. While we're discussing asserting religious freedom on the right and on the left when it comes to issues like who can serve who and who gets sued for serving who and that sort of thing, we have to understand that anything we come up with that that increases religious freedom can also increase the freedom of Islamists. And we know what Islamists will do when they get hold of that freedom. They will use it to negate everyone else's freedom. So my caution to my very good friends on the religious right is be extremely careful that you do not create something that Islam can use to gain power. Because if you do that, you know, give it a decade or two, and theirs will be the only religion practiced here.
What really disturbs me about that is that I gravitated towards this article because he did make a comparison with Sharia law, and I was rather excited that somebody as popular as John Fugelsang would comment on this issue. And when I was listening to this video, I was like, oh, my God, like, what? And it's just, but the point you bring up, Agador, and the point I have brought up numerous times on the radio program here is that that there is a separation of church and state. Mm-hmm. It's been forced upon us, but Islam gets a pass. I talk about the Valley Park Middle School in Toronto, where it's a mosqueteria every Friday afternoon. We are not allowed to recite the Lord's Prayer anymore. I remember doing that when I was in public school as a child. And ladies and gentlemen, I was in public school when I was a child. That sounded really ridiculous, but all the same, I remember when we would go to our homeroom, we would recite the Lord's Prayer, sing God Save the Queen, and sing O Canada. And now that's all gone. It's out of there. It's totally out of there. But these public schools, all the same, are still accommodating Islam and their Islamic makeshift mosques. They even bring in an imam every Friday afternoon to conduct Friday prayer at Valley Park Middle School. Why is it, though, that when we have to adhere to the separation of church and state, that Islam gets a pass? And Tim?
Well, the answer is that that shouldn't happen. The separation in church and state, excuse me, in my view, if you're going to construct a society around a separation of church and state, and there are arguments for and against that scenario, I appreciate that, but if you're going to have that situation, then that should be true for everybody. And the fact that we are allowing Islam to do what it does by effectively saying the concept of separation of church and state does not exist for Islam, we're setting ourselves up for huge problems that we are now starting to see. We're starting to see Muslims aggressively pushing for all sorts of demonstrations of their religious rituals in the public space, and we are expected to tolerate it, even though the separation of church and state has meant that for us, we can't do those things. Okay, it might have been deemed to be, well, all right, let's try and not include religion in the public space, might have been deemed as a good idea. And as I say, that is something that's open to question. But nevertheless, it's the way we have things at the moment. But then, as Agador said, it should be true for everybody, because if you allow one group not to practice that separation, then that group is going to have a huge advantage in shaping the way that society develops. And it was recognized as a very, very important thing hundreds of years ago. I remember when I was very young at school and being taught European and British history, how there was this huge argument about church and state, and I never fully comprehended it at the time as to why it was such a big deal. But it obviously was a big deal, because people fought and died for the right to have that separation. And it was deemed that if you were going to have that separation, you would produce a society that was going to be very different from the case that would be if you didn't have that separation. Now, as I say, there's plenty of arguments that go in both directions, which are not so important here. What's important is if you're going to have that separation, you should be enforcing it everywhere. And for Islam to come along and for Muslims to say, well, that separation doesn't exist, then you've got to say to them, well, in that case, you cannot practice Islam at all in anywhere in the public space. No mosques, nothing. If you cannot have a separation of church and state to conform to the way we do things, then we don't have it at all. And that's one of the reasons I'm so supportive of what Paul Weston of Liberty GB says when he says the only way forward, if we're going to keep our civilization, our civilizational model, the way it is, the Judeo-Christian civilizational model, is we have to get rid of Islam altogether, because Muslims will never accept the concept of church and state being separate, and it's so fundamental to the way that we do things as a civilization that if we do not enforce this universally, we're effectively contributing to the destruction of our civilization, and that's one of the biggest issues. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people out there who would say that taking religion out of the public space is to the detriment of our spiritual environment, okay, and that's an argument we can perhaps have another day. But the fact is we have got this separation, and it should be enforced fairly and without favor for everybody. And all the problems that we have with Islam are because we're not enforcing that separation.
Absolutely. And we have Moving Forward here that would like to contribute to that. And hi, Moving. How are you today?
Moving.
Hey, it's just me, Moving. And I'm entirely off topic because I'm just getting in the door from D.C. again, day four.
Mm.
Right.
Yay.
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 So I think, Kim's making some big points and more germane to some of the efforts you've been undertaking. Tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, there's going to be a meeting at the Washington Monument, and there is every morning between 8 and 10 o'clock. And a group of prayer warriors get up there and do nothing but pray for 2 hours, and they have it on a live participation line. And I'm not in the chat room. I just can't get in on my bandwidth. So I called in.
Mm-hmm.
And the number is 712, and I hope somebody types this in the chat room, 7-432-1690. And then there's an access number where it's an actual, like, conference. You can just participate and just say who you are and why you're there. And the access number is 399-430.
Repeat that, because I'm going to put it in the chat room right now. So repeat that, and I'll text it into the chat room.
From 8 to 10, but the best time to dial in is probably 8:30 to 10, is 712-432-1690. And then the access number is 399-430-pound. And it's the Congressional Prayer Conference of Washington, D.C., Dr. Wiley Drake. And this guy is awesome. And, I hope Moving's still moving as good as this guy when I'm his age, because he's like 112. And he's also full of salt and vinegar. I'm just kidding there. He's not that old, but he's awesome. And we prayed for 2 hours straight, and people from all over the country, from different states, got to give a prayer, and the mic gets passed, and both the boots on the ground in Washington, we said the prayers for the people around the world, the people in the United States for healing, and then people from all over the country got to participate, which was awesome. Now, So that goes on at the Washington Monument every morning with Occupy American Spring with Colonel Riley's chaplain, Dr. Drake. And this guy's awesome. And then at 10 o'clock, everybody kind of gets together and they walk over to the Capitol, near the Capitol building, in front of the Aerospace Museum where the Occupy American Spring headquarters is. And then they give a noon report on the YouTube channel. And by the way, I don't know what people are saying on the Internet or around the world, but I'm getting ready to plant some seeds in the mall and watch them grow and be there because this group isn't going anywhere. And as we speak, there's 750 veterans on motorcycles headed to D.C. Some of them were arriving that's the advance party. There's going to be a huge amount. The Rolling Thunder veterans are going to support Occupy American Spring, from what I'm hearing. And the place is going to be mobbed. So,
excellent.
I'm just way excited.
You know, moving? I think this is a brilliant endeavor, Operation American Spring, ladies and gentlemen. It is going to build. It's going to be bigger, stronger, and we are faster moving in. And, hey, that was a play on words there, Moon. But we are. We're moving in, and we are, thank the current administration. Hey, we're here, and you're accountable. And,
hey,
Agador, I know that you have a lot of thoughts on this.
Well, yeah, it is a bit off topic, but in a way, it's all about spirituality, and it's about patriotism. It's about hope that, you know, the statists and you know, their little handmaidens that are now Islam won't win. You know, and this is the kind of thing that I admire a lot. It's patriots getting together in their gathering places and peacefully just showing the government that you know, that we are not going to be moved from what we believe, and showing the people that yes, there is something wrong going on in this country, and doing it with the kind of dignity that only you know, true American patriots and supporters of our Tea Party movement can bring forward. And I just wanted to say, moving, you know, to you, to Bigfoot, to, you know, to Tricia, because I know I'm sure she'll be back out there. You know, to all of you guys, you know, we just respect the heck out of that. We respect that as much as we respect any EDL demo or anything of that nature. It's all about ordinary people showing the statists that they don't own it all yet. And so just big, mad, huge respect to you, brother.
Oh, heck, I
got it. Oh, absolutely. Thank you so very much.
Yeah, I don't want to take up a lot of your time, but Kel, I did a plug for the EDL and for the Red Fox blogger today on the noon report. And, you know, just kind of keep the we need people to call in Hagman and Hagman and Pastor Paul Bagley, who promised to participate in Operation American Spring. I haven't seen them, but God bless them for, you know, we need their listeners to weigh in and support us. Kel, I need you and Agador and others, because I'm not hooked up on the net, remind them, and their mm-hmm. their awesome listeners, remind them that, hey, the thunder's coming in the next few days. I saw the bikes rolling in as I was driving out. So
right on.
Well,
Moving,
I'm going to hang up and just
so
put me
much.
On mute. Put me on mute so
okay.
you can finish up your show. And Tim, I'm sorry for interjecting, sir.
Yeah, no worries. No worries. Good to hear you. Glad you could call in.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, this show has been taking so many directions today, but we have been taking directions of worthiness, and please, my American cousins, support Operation American Spring and ensure that you get your country back. We are down to our last 10 minutes of talking points here, Tim. But we started out the program talking about, you know, that fizzy fella, Fayez Magal. And when we have people that personally attack us, how to deal with it? This is just unreal to me, Tim.
Well, with something like Fayez Magal, I think we were talking about this last night, and he's a great one for punishing anybody who speaks out against Islam or the Quran or the Islamic prophet Muhammad and everything he said or did or didn't do. And he would just like no criticism of Islam whatsoever. Well, okay, that's all well and good, but if you prohibit any kind of criticism, then you very quickly get to the point where the people who allow that situation to take place eventually have control over you. And I don't think that we should be accommodating that kind of approach. I wouldn't mind if Islam was the greatest thing since sliced bread for humanity, but it's not. It's a very poor civilizational model. I frequently make this distinction, ladies and gentlemen, because a lot of people can say, well, one faith is very much like another faith, and, you know, how many angels can you fit on the head of a pin anyway, which was an argument that was prevailed in the Middle Ages. And I say, well, it's nothing to do with faith. It's all to do with politics, and Islam is politics masquerading as faith, which is what makes it so dangerous, because Muslims pretend that that is not the case, and they use taqiyya to lie and deceive to us non-Muslims, and they say that Islam is absolutely no danger to Western civilization and our democracy and so on and so forth. And an awful lot of people in authority are taken in by this, but we really shouldn't allow it. And the best way to counter anything that Muslims like Fayez Magal say is to have open and free discussions on anything and everything. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter if people like Fayez Magal feel offended. We just say, well, that's part of the price that you pay for living in a free and open society, that from every now and again you'll be offended. I mean, I'm offended every day when I look around the world and I see what Muslims do in the name of Islam, slaughtering their way around the world in the name of Allah in the most horrible ways. They're given a, well, I won't say they're given a free pass for it, but if we were to do similar things, then people would come down on us like a ton of bricks. But because it's Muslims doing it, the world yawns and says, oh, it's just those pesky Muslims acting up again. And there's the racism of low expectations, which is creeping in here. We don't expect any better from Muslims, and so we let them get away with things that we would never allow ourselves to get away with. Well, that has to stop. We have to hold Muslims accountable in the same way that we do everybody else for the things that they do, and we have to have a free and open discussion on anything and everything that affects Islam's ability to try and gain political control over us, because everything they do that relates to us as non-Muslims has a political aspect, and if they're allowed to enforce that and we are not allowed to criticize it, then pretty soon they will get their own way. So we have to say, if you don't like the fact that we're criticizing Islam, then sling your hook, we don't want you. And this is what I was coming down to shortly before the last break we had, where I said I agree with what Paul Weston of Liberty GB says, that if Islam cannot stand the cut and thrust of political debate and criticism of the political aspects of Islam, then we have to say there's no place for it in our country or in any Western country.
Absolutely.
Where we want to maintain democracy.
And Agador, first of all, Tim and myself want to thank you very, very much for joining the program tonight. You have actually been instrumental. You're a bit of a gift of serendipity today, and you helped me get through some a topic that I was very unfamiliar, and I kind of sprung it on my co-host. And is the co-host with the most disc. So, Agador, thank you so very much for being here as well. Do you have any parting words for the listeners?
Well, except to say thank you, Kel and Tim, for allowing me on, come in here and horn in on your excellent show. I will be putting out something new later this week myself, The Unpleasant Blind Guy on YouTube, so watch out for that. All love and respect to my brothers and sisters out there in participating in Operation American Spring, and of course as always, same thing to all my EDL brothers and sisters. I appreciate all of you guys. I'm thinking of all the fam that are under the weather now, from G-Ski to everyone else, Kelly, that you mentioned. And just want to say thank you again for having me on, and goodbye.
And, well, we will be speaking with you again on Thursday, where Agador is the panelist on the English Defense League radio show, heard Thursdays, Fridays, and Sundays at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And so, Agador, thank you, and we'll be talking with you very soon.
You're welcome, sweetie. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, cheerio. Cheerio, Agador.
Cheerio, Tim.
Well, Tim, here we are again. Top of the hour, the final hour, and we're out of time.
I don't know where the time goes. I really don't.
But, I have no idea.
It was great to have Agador on, and nice to hear from Moving and Sue as well.
Mm-hmm.
We moved on quite a bit from the original topic, which was old fizzy bollocks, as we in the counter-jihad movement love to call him. I actually put that at the start of my email to him. I said, I do hope you don't mind me calling you old fizzy bollocks. I said, I think it sounds so much less pretentious than Fiaz Magal OBE. So we'll see what he makes of that. But no doubt he'll be wailing and gnashing his teeth for months to come, because I don't suppose we've heard the last of him by a long chalk. He's like a dog with a bone, and he's just going to keep on blaming everybody else for all his misfortunes. And I'm sure that won't change, because it's his nature, which is what he writes on his blog says a lot more about him than it does about myself or people like yourself and Mike Holt of Restore Australia. If he wants to vent his spleen in that way, then I think everybody who has an opinion on what he's said should write to him. Be polite, everybody, but write to him, drop him a line, and tell him exactly what you think of him. And don't forget to start your email off with "Good morning, old fizzy bollocks," because he just loves that honorific. He prefers it, I think. Well, he doesn't say that he prefers it, but I'm sure he does prefer it a lot more than a dear Fiaz Magal OBE. So please feel free, old fizzy bollocks, as the preferred honorific.
Yeah, and ladies and gentlemen, do visit that site, and it's right there in the show notes, and I'll put it in the chat room once again. Inundate him with comments. Let's drive this guy crazy, okay?
Yes. Well, I think that's a very commendable thing to say. I'm all for free and open speech, and he's entirely entitled to say what he says, you know, but we should be entirely entitled to say what we want to say as well.
His mind is a condominium, and we're all moving in.
Well, I want the big soft feather bed in the corner.
That's mine. Get out of there. But, we are just going to drive this person absolutely batshit crazy. And pardon my French, ladies and gentlemen, but once again, he's taking a run at our Tim Burton. And I, for one, am not putting up with it. And Tim has been, he's been a pretty quiet about it of late. But when these sort of things cross my desk, I'm sorry, I bring it up.
I'm glad you did.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't have said a great deal about it myself, but given the opportunity to discuss it, I think there are important things to say. And one is the obvious fact that he hasn't learned anything from his defeats
in court
over the past month. He still maintains it's everybody else's fault and that nobody should be allowed to say anything against Islam or Muslims or the Quran or anything concerning himself in particular. I'm sure if he could have my head on a spike, he would do so. He thinks that my insulting him in the way that I have been doing is beyond the pale. Well,
exactly.
That's part and parcel of living in a free and open democracy, and long may it continue. And if anybody else would like to write to him along those lines, then please feel free to do so.
Exactly, and I put the link in the chat room again, and like I say, though, it's also in the show notes. Write this little scumbag some letters. Let the mendacious, grievance-mongering Takiya artist know exactly how we feel, as Tim did. Let's let him know on his own website that we are not putting up with it any longer. And, Tim, a great show. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Kel, and thanks to all our listeners who stayed with us for the full 2 hours, and hopefully you'll be joining us again at the same time next week for another episode of RFB Radio WOW. So thank you very much, Kel.
Hey, you bet, Tim. Hey, I'm going to see you tomorrow night where we will be at the Radio Jihad Network. Woo-hoo.
Oh, yes, Freedom-Loving Infidels, 6 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, 11 o'clock British Summer Time. Be there or be square is what we always used to say. Whenever, oh, my goodness, there's a phrase that's a blast from the past. We always used to say that when I was a teenager, if you wanted somebody to turn up for something.
you outed yourself.
Yes, I know. How embarrassing. I'm showing my age, Kel.
Tim's an old man.
Okay, there's no need to rub it in.
Okay. Hey, Tim, I'll be speaking with you soon. And Agador, you as well. And everybody, thank you so very much for joining the Red Fox Blogger. And remember, it is mass Islamity, and we have to stop the insanity. Have a great week, everybody. Good night, Tim. Good night, Agador.
Good night, Kel. Good night, Agador.
Good night, Kel. Good night, Tim.
Keep hope alive.
I know sometimes in life you feel that everything is lost, and that mountain is just too high to climb.
Keep hope alive.
Well, that's when you gotta dig deep down inside and reach that inner strength you never knew you had. Carry on another day. Another day goes by and you're outside, still wondering why, watching everything you work so hard, and life all begins to fall apart. It breaks your heart to see it all crumbling at the wayside. You wanna lay your head down, pack it in and say goodbye, cause there's nothing left here to keep hope alive, until you see the only two things in life that really matter. It's a little girl and a little boy, one's your foolish pride, one's your beautiful joy. What's left of a candy bar when it's like the remains of Chips Ahoy, playing with a piece of driftwood that create a little mind made into a beautiful toy. And at that moment you realize you gotta rebuild everything Mother Nature had just destroyed. Their precious little heartbeat gave you respect over a thousand men, gave you the will to get back up on your feet again. Because you knew right then this battle wasn't about you, it's all about them. And you reassured them like only a daddy can, and they knew right then that everything was gonna be alright.
Oh,
showers were here to you.